Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
Well, hello, listeners.
Well, hey, if you've just been buried literally under a pile of snow and ice like we have.
Yes, for the past week. We're always a little bit past in time from when you're listening to this. So we're recording this at the end of January, and it has been quite a week here in Nashville, Tennessee, as I know some other parts of the country have also really struggled.
Honey, Tennessee, we woke up and we were like, hey, we never have the infrastructure or means for a little bit of snow, let alone this entire fuck-ass winter storm that we've had. I mean, wow.
How are you doing? The ice of it all. The ice of all. Like, it's just, the irony is still just so ridiculous to me that we are having this incredibly destructive ice in the streets. It's been wild. Yeah. And I don't even know, like, the whole, you know, I know with the snow thing and the roads that the infrastructure issues are unique to, you know, say the South, which is not well prepared. But I don't know what could prepare any place for the amount of trees that just simply fell on power lines, right? And that when there's, you know, 200K plus outages, like, it is just, it's been a time.
Just straight up exploding. I was like, I didn't know trees could be exploding like that. You learn something new every
cracking.
Day.
Frost cracking.
Frost cracking and quaking.
And I feel so bad for them. Like, I feel bad for the trees. I know. Like, even the ones that are just, like, they're, like, bent over because they're just covered in, like, pounds and pounds of ice.
Yeah.
We were just walking around yesterday, like, oh, my God, these poor babies. I mean, obviously, the people safety is of paramount importance. But also, I'm just, like, so sad to see this level of destruction of trees.
Oh, my God. And if you know anything about me and Valerie, like, we are legit those white bitches that are tree huggers. You know what I mean? So I'm like, you think we're joking? We're not. Like,
no,
we are
grieving.
We're grieving the trees. But, you know, I hope everyone's been safe. You know, if you've had this weather, please take care. And yeah, just the great snowmageddon of Nashville 2026, just a big one that we're still seeing what's going to come from it. So I really hope everyone's safe and just taking care of yourself the best way that you can. All right. Well, I'm very excited for today's episode. And of course, I have to cut, you know, like, we have to go juicy. We have to start juicy. Also, we haven't seen each other. So I'm like, bitch, let's talk shit. Let's go. So we've maybe floated this before. And maybe our parasocial episode where we were talking about tea and pop culture and celebrities. But what is some pop culture tea that you just can't get over?
You know, it's funny because until you said that, I totally forgot about that question. And so it's possible that my answer is the same. I don't know. I literally couldn't tell you. But the tea that I am sad about is I'm sad about Bennifer. I just love a reunion story. I mean, who doesn't love? It's like very The Notebook that these star-crossed young lovers do 20 years later or whatever, reunite. And then for what? Like, they get engaged and then call it off again. Obviously, it is my business and I need to know all the details. But I just...
Obviously, I'm their marriage and family therapist. I'm involved.
I know. And you know that I went through a J-Lo phase recently. And so I just want, obviously, my girl to be happy. And, you know, Ben Affleck, just, I don't know. I guess some people might think he's a tool, but he feels like a likable person to me. So I just love them together. And I guess it just ain't it for them.
Yeah, it's messy. I can't ever think of him without that meme of him with the cigarette up against the wall. And I'm like, that's actually how I've felt this entire week. That's the physical embodiment.
Oh, what's your pop culture tea?
I mean, girl, I am a teapot, you know, like, I'm this beautiful chinoiserie teapot. I'm the old woman that lives in the shoe, but I'm the bitch living in the teapot. I'm Mrs. Potts of it all, Beauty and the Beast. Okay, I have to call time there because I'll just keep riffing on it enough. But this drama with the Beckhams, are you locked into this?
I've literally not heard anything about it. But oh, I mean, God. I love a Posh Spice. I need to know.
Bitch, Posh is having a moment. The ladies and the queers and everyone is like, uh-uh. So the eldest, I think he is the eldest, Brooklyn, right? He's gotten married. And like, I'm not like fully sipping the tea on the Beckhams, but it's just so interesting to me and kind of what made me want to do this episode today, just thinking about this at a large cultural scale, is he came out with this massive statement that was essentially just calling out the toxicity amongst his family of origin, saying that at multiple occasions, like he has across his life felt like anxious and manipulated by his parents, that they've been like so inappropriate. They're just really mad at him because they don't like who he's married to, is how he's coming out with it. You need to go find that statement because I was like, whoa.
Damn.
Just so messy. This is such a beloved family. So it's very interesting to me, but the internet is having a fucking heyday because he was saying that Posh on his wedding day, when he was supposed to have, I think, his first dance with his wife, she like cut in, and this wedding had like, it's a Beckham wedding, bitch.
Sure. It's basically one tier under a royal wedding, right?
Yes. Like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people were there. And so everyone's making memes about her like cutting in and making fun of her for being that mother-in-law or like that boy mom that is like kind of incestuously like enmeshed, obsessed with her sons. Very enmeshed. So, you know, everything is always with a big pinch of salt. But like these are very powerful, like you said, right under royalty. So I'm like, ooh, the girls, the Beckhams are fighting. The Beckhams are fighting.
Okay, I'm going to look into this. And, you know, I will publicly note that Posh was always my least favorite spice. However, you know, I wish everyone the best. I wish everyone some good family therapy.
Sure. And Team Jerry. I was always Team Jerry.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Now it's time for our first segment, Tea and Crumpets, where we tell you what we can't stop talking about this week.
On Tuesday, when our house finally got down to 34 degrees, and I was just like, I am about to lose my damn mind. I am actually starting to get worried for the cats. And, you know, we even had – this is with our gas fireplace going and bundled up in mummy sleeping bags and everything. So finally, we decided we were going to – because it seemed like it was going to be a lot longer than it was because our outage was so complicated. So we're like, well, this could be days and days. I need to get the fuck out of here. We knew a lot of people were going to hotels and we didn't have family nearby with, you know, power. And so we started looking at hotels and everything was booked up. And I will own, I have become like slightly bougie as an adult. We didn't do hotels much as a kid, but, you know, occasionally it would be like a motel or maybe, you know, like a cheap hotel, which is fine. You know, you don't need more than that. But I'm a Marriott girly. And so I'm used to like my Spring Hill Suites, my Fairfield, my Courtyard, my Residence Inn, you know, little 3-star hotels. Lovely. But they were full or too far away to drive on these roads. So I found us a room at the Super 8 on Charlotte Pike right behind the Waffle House. And you know what? Never have I been more grateful for a Super 8 motel in my life. It was everything we needed. I just, you know, obviously we need a place that could accept our kitties. And so having to haul the cats, the litter, the water bowl, all the things. But we were there for 2 nights and I just feel incredibly grateful. So thank you to all of the people who've been staffing these hotels and motels and helping us get some heat.
Mm. Lovely. Shout out Super 8, girl. Okay. So I am not one for comedy. And the crowd gasps because everyone thinks I'm the most hilar bitch ever, said nobody. I've got to be in the right kind of headspace to go see live comedy, which I've done like not a lot in my life, and sit in my home and watch it. Mm-hmm. However, all of that comes out of the window when it comes to Caleb Heron because I will say he's 30, so he's like zillennial to me. Like he's kind of right in the middle there. I am ready to argue that he is probably the greatest comedian of my generation.
Damn.
And I don't think anyone can top him because he is just fucking hilarious. His ability to banter with people is just, it's so good. So he has his like big HBO special, Model Comedian.
Yeah.
Which is so funny. It's only an hour. So that's also my other thing, the ADHD part of me, where it's like, why am I watching a comedy special on Netflix and it's 2.5 hours? I think I don't fucking care. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't care. Can we make this an hour? And that's just a me thing, but so funny. I just love him. I watch his podcast. I've gone to his live show when he came in Nashville. So like, I'm just such a stan of his for sure. But so funny. If you're looking for about an hour, something palatable, like a lot of jokes about, you know, like being queer and being or being fat. Like he just like encompasses comedy so well in this like very kind of interesting and like culturally sensitive time.
Cool.
But he puts his money where his mouth is. Mm. You know, he's from Kansas City. So he's just locked in politically. He's a great activist. He's just so fucking funny and cool. Yeah. So
awesome. I've never even heard of him. So I will totally check this out. Maybe tonight.
You will die. He's just awesome. Funny.
You have to check out, I don't remember if I told you about Trey Crowder, who's the liberal redneck. Mm. We saw them recently when they came to Zany's, but he and his, they call it well-read comedy group that they do. And he's just hilarious. So he has a set on YouTube called Trash Daddy. And the whole thing's on YouTube. It is one of the funniest stand-up sets I've ever seen. It's his most recent one. So highly recommend.
Trash Daddy. Okay, I'm putting that in the pocket.
Yeah.
Now it's time for Step Into My Office, where you get advice from your favorite professionally qualified, personally peculiar therapist.
Dear M and Val, I feel like a hypocrite, and I don't love that about myself. I am deeply invested when there's drama around me. Friend group tension, workplace beef, family conflict, even celebrity feuds. I have opinions. I analyze. I pretend it's just curiosity. But honestly, it's entertaining. The problem is that when the conflict involves me, I completely fall apart. If I find out people are talking about me, I spiral. Ooh. I feel embarrassed, exposed, ashamed. Even when I don't think I did anything wrong, I replay everything and suddenly I'm convinced everyone hates me. Why is other people's drama fascinating, but my own conflict feels unbearable? And how do I stop feeling like I'm on trial every time there's tension involving me? Signed, recovering gossip girl.
Ooh. Gossip.
What do you think?
So many thoughts. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk today about like why this is normal for so many reasons. But yes. I also think so much ego shit gets tied up in all of this. And so I really, one of the things that was coming up for me is, even though it's very relatable that this listener is, oh, but I hate when it's about me, I'm also sort of like, don't dish what you can't take, you know, recognize that, because kind of think, even when I try to be mindful of the whole four agreements, be impeccable with your word, right? Like I try not to just be like shit talking all the time. But even if I were to say something, you know, I try to be mindful of like, okay, just because I'm expressing this whatever thing that this person did that I thought was weird or upsetting or whatever, I'm not like saying they're a shit person or whatever. And so if someone is expressing to someone else frustration about me, I can put that into the wider context of, that doesn't mean that they hate me. That doesn't mean everyone's going to hate me. The reality is we all do this. And so, yeah, there probably are times that people are saying something about you. And, you know, if you can put that into the context of like, yeah, sometimes you do that too. I don't know. I guess I just think that unless someone's going to abstain from ever saying anything about anyone else or gossiping at all, just be prepared. You're going to be on the receiving end of it sometimes, babe.
I think that's so true. And, you know, a part of, you know, me being someone where I certainly do get entertainment. And then when it is my own personal stuff, I'm like, oh, so what if I dug myself a 6-foot hole and never came out of it and just made a little cottage under here where no one can hurt me? And the more I sit with that, the more I'm like, okay, well, that's my like intense discomfort with conflict. Yeah. And that's my personal work. And it sounds like that might be some of your truth too, Miss Gossip Girl. And that's okay. You know, like kind of, I really hear what you're saying too of, I mean, it's what goes around comes around. I'm radically accepting that I'm annoying as fuck to some people and they probably don't like me. And they probably just don't like my personality. And maybe they talk about that, or they don't like how I act or whatever. And they talk about that because I've done that to people slash right. probably still do it. You know, like I'm not above it. I'm not a liar, you know, that I don't kind of do a little perception check. Hey, you seeing this? So more to come on that. But, you know, this is just such a normal part of human experience that I wanted to bring in just because of all of the onion layers to, you know, why this is such a thing and why this is such a big deal culturally. And how it's the same but different in our interpersonal spheres. So I think, honestly, listener, keep listening, babe. And yeah, kind of everything has to come with a really big pinch of salt, especially when it comes to our interpersonal conflicts and how we look at that on the big screen of, I'm going to weigh in about Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, but I don't know these girls from Adam. Right. So what the fuck do I know?
Yeah, exactly. I saw Therapy Jeff made a post the other day about something about Kristen and Dax. And because apparently people are just losing their minds over why is she with him? And he's so insecure and he projects all his insecurities onto her. And his whole point for the video was basically saying, guys, like, it's not our place to judge their relationship. We only see a tiny fraction of it. And she is an adult with not only full agency, but access to like massive resources. She can make her own big girl decisions and it's not ours to judge or decide that for her. But it was so funny because some of the commenters were like, clearly did not watch the video. And all they saw was like, oh, someone talking about Kristen and Dax's relationship. Like, it's not, you know, ours to judge. And people were like, girl, did you watch the video? That's exactly what he was saying. Like, people are just so impatient these days. Yes. My God. Okay, anyway. But yeah, and I think, too, the last thing I'll say to this listener is maybe get curious about your own motives when you do feel like you get slide into that gossiping with friends or whoever. Because, for instance, if it is about bonding, which is very common, maybe if you're like, well, man, I don't like the feeling of being on the receiving end of that, so I'd like to dish it less, but how can I still bond with these people, right?
Yeah.
There are other ways. Yeah.
That's a great point.
And now it's time for the DSM. In our DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. In this segment, we break down complicated concepts and common misconceptions about mental health, well-being, and tell you what we really think.
We're going backwards because while our last episode was about rupture and repair, we're just diving right into, and I loved how you spelled this here, conflict.
And for the listeners, I spelled it C-W-A-N-F-L-I-C-T, conflict.
And of course, watching that, observing it from the outside, just as our listener expressed, can feel delicious. Yeah. And until we're the ones that are being watched, until we are the subject of the speculation and observation. Oh, yeah. So we're exploring in this conversation that whole spectator satisfaction, the social learning of it all, the bonding, the shame, and looking at all of the pop culture beefs that continue to keep us all gagged. So starting with exploring why does conflict feel entertaining when it's about other people and yet humiliating, super dysregulating when it's ours? And also it seems like maybe this is the, you know, the social media element, like it's all of these kind of factors coming together that it seems like it's even more irresistible than ever in the wider culture right now. So first of all, looking at conflict as social information, watching these sort of feuds unfold is sort of giving our brains, we're primates essentially, right? We're these pack animals, these tribal animals. And so we want to know who's got power, who's correct here. What are the social sort of rules and norms here? What happens if someone steps out of line? And so assessing all of that, which is essentially what we're doing when we are in the gossip and the beef of it all, is social threat assessment. So while there is an entertainment element of it, we're not just being entertained. We're also like doing those complex social calculations. There's also this sense of moral superiority and relief when it's not our own stuff. When we get to observe it from the outside, we're like, ooh, I've got someone to kind of side with here. I've got someone that I can sort of judge and feel better than, which, you know, sucks to name that, but like, let's be honest, right? Like when I said the ego shit comes into it, it's, and also this temporary relief from our own shit, right? Whatever's going on with us. Oh, we're like, well, at least I'm not dealing with that until guess what? Then maybe the next week you are. And when it's these external conflicts, we get that projection without personal risk. Someone else's fight, like we get to project our own anger that we don't express in our maybe real lives and relationships. We get this sort of emotional catharsis without any real life consequences. And we get to feel that like boldness of like, I'm going to chime in. I'm going to write 200 words comment about Kristen and Dax's relationship without ever actually having to be vulnerable myself.
Well, I think that's why it's so interesting when we look at the paradox of like, it's so juicy and like stimulating and interesting. And then it feels bad when it's our fight or it's our shit that we're unpacking. And so, of course, take a shot every time I talk about the nervous system, but it's true, you know. So when you kind of enter as the subject of some whisperings or a feud of your own, you're losing that narrative control, which is really, really challenging when it comes to our personal values or how we want other people to see us authentically. So that narrative control is really challenging. Our attachment systems are starting to light up, baby. So, ooh, you know, is this bringing up weirdness within me that other people are talking about me and I don't know what to do with that? Or I'm kind of feeling like I'm on the outs with my friend group and that's bringing up all of this shame from my family of origin, however it tickles, right? And then shame is coming in and replacing that curiosity. Shame is one of the biggest things I think I'm encountering as a 26-year-old where I'm like, huh, this thing, we really got to have a handle on shame or it'll swallow you up and make you sick. And I mean, sick at the soul level, it's a big part of this conversation as well. So that important distinction here, watching the drama, whether it's big screen or outside of yourself in your real life, like Valerie says, is a little bit regulating in that way. It gives a little bit of that healthy or unhealthy detachment, we could argue that, to our own shit. Being watched feels threatening because that perception during conflict is a potential for social rejection, which we are social creatures. And so to feel, like I was saying earlier, on the outs, you know, with someone or especially a group, a larger group of people, is really challenging and breeds a lot of fear around isolation, being misunderstood, just being like a leper, the way that like cancel culture, you know, makes me nervous as just like a normal person, you know.
Public shaming is so real.
Public shame is back in a big way, thanks to Gen Z. So that's kind of our, I wanted to definitely throw in like our generational conditioning. Of course, you have a millennial and a zillennial Gen Z here to kind of get juicy with it. Yeah, I just wanted us to kind of talk about our own experiences in those perspectives. So millennials, take us there, Valerie. What do you think?
Well, and obviously the caveat anytime we're talking about generational stuff is the lines can be blurry between, and also always variation in every generation. But a lot of millennials were raised by boomers, right? Who are famously like, how about we just handle our shit privately? How about you go feel that in your bedroom? That's not air our dirty laundry. Those are not things we talk about. I mean, it used to be the norm in my generation growing up. Like it's like, you don't talk about things like politics, religion, money around people. So like a lot was private, you know, and then there's like maybe some positive aspects of like, be the bigger person, right? But conflict also is not always looked on favorably in this generation, right? That it's failure or it's immaturity to get into conflict. And of course, the media of this generation, reality TV, came up in the millennial generation, that this, it's just like trash, but also like the train wreck you can't look away from. The Kardashians, Real World, Laguna Beach, you know, all the early Bachelor era, and all these love triangles that are just like looked at as, you know, this pinnacle of what, you know, we should all aim for. And Twilight, the Edward versus Jacob of it all. Meanwhile, no one has any emotional literacy whatsoever. And so I think millennials then sort of draw from that this like, well, on one hand, I hate drama, but also like I'm sort of always on the periphery of it. Let's admit it. Let's admit it. We are the generation that invented reality trash television. Let's not pretend that we don't love the drama. What about the Gen Z of it all?
Yes. So I think there our cultural messaging and what we're witnessing kind of at the forefront right now with social media and just that my generation is at large right now. So we're really hanging on visibility and receipts. Ooh, I could be at a restaurant and I could say, oh, yeah, I'll take the receipt. And then I'm like, receipt? Because even the word receipt has a new cultural kind of meaning around it where it's like, oh, well, fuck you. I have the receipts. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, yes. Shit. We're in our tell your truth era. You know, what's your truth? We're exposing harm. We're naming it publicly. And a big one for the Gen Zers right now, which I think is a conversation at large, is silence automatically equals complicity. And so, you know, everything politically that's happening right now, as a Gen Zer, as a Zillennial, it's really, I'm feeling challenged with this silence equals complicity kind of paradox in my own activism journey. I get on the internet, you know, I get on Instagram and I'm like, so should I be talking about ICE, you know? But then I'm like, my 50 Instagram followers know that I don't fuck with ICE, you know? Like, I don't need to tell them that. So, but me in college was like, if I don't, then
what will people think?
What would people think? But I was also very trapped in performative activism at the start of my journey there because I was so young and misinformed. So certainly our current relationship to media, TikTok callouts, oh my God, the juicy juice of it all. If you want to expose a hoe, you pull up TikTok.com and that shit is going to go viral. And we're all, oh, and the stitches that are happening, everyone is getting to throw tomatoes. Everyone's having this public reckoning where we're like, you must be held accountable. Michaela Noguera, beauty influencer, for lying about wearing fake eyelashes. Wait, oh my God. What? You know, like we're getting in the weeds here. And then, of course, our celebrity beef as discourse. Kendrick versus Drake, baby. This became a cultural Rorschach test in the way that PETA versus Gale from the Hunger Games series used to be. Are you PETA versus Gale? Are you Kendrick versus Drake? So our Gen Z instinct is, you know, if you're doing harm, why shouldn't people know? Why shouldn't people peel back that veil, very wicked coded, and see, oh, the wizard isn't this big ass dude, it's this little puppeteer just trying to figure out how to make it work back there. So kind of the trickle down from millennials where like we're seeing explosive fights and stuff happening on TV with reality TV. We were all, you know, I was watching Bad Girls Club in middle school, honey. I was like, oh yeah, the girls are literally fighting. But now it's kind of turned from, oh, people are making an ass of themselves on reality TV to now regular people going across their day-to-day lives that are not reality stars, that are not TikTok stars, normal people that are behaving shitty is being captured. And then the entire internet is getting to weigh in on that. And that's just really interesting to me.
Yeah. So like we're all stars now and our whole fucking lives are being recorded and shared on the internet.
Yes. This another, is Big Brother coded.
Yeah. Oh my God. And another aspect of the generational piece that I just thought of was like, oh, kind of along the lines of the millennial, I just hate drama. And then, okay, explain how you're always seem to be surrounded by it is like the narrative of girls are just so drama and like girls are just like, so catty. And I just like, never had like close girlfriends because they're just like so bitchy and catty. And it's like, and you know, the hard part is Mean Girls did not come out of nowhere. There's truth to that. There are, especially in, you know, high school, etc., like the cliques and all of that, the social hierarchies are real. But that idea of then girls are bitchy and girls are catty and therefore I don't have close girlfriends, that's just shitty. And that's one thing that I feel like Gen Z came along and was like, hey, actually, we're going to lift each other up. And I feel like millennials, as we've grown up, have kind of gone there too. But then I think it's very easy to slide back into the pit and not realize when we're tearing each other down unnecessarily.
I think the Gen Z piece that I want to add in there is just how the realm of social media tenses up when a woman comes into the forefront and we deem her not a girl's girl.
Ooh.
The millennial version of that is, yeah, oh, I just, you know, girls are catty. I always was friends with boys. It was easier. And the Gen Z version of that, like you were saying, we seek to lift each other up as women, and just women, AFAB yeah. people I'm talking sure. about predominantly with this, but you know, we lift one another up. But if someone deviates from that, she's not a girl's girl. And the attack on that Ariana Grande of it all, if you were ever Ooh. Chipped in to her and Ethan Slater, his ex-wife was like, she's publicly was like, she's not a girl's girl. She fucked my husband. She's not a girl's girl. So we were all like, whoa.
And that's so interesting because it's also like, I'm thinking of Christy Noem, right? It seems like not yeah. a girl's girl, but also I'm sorry. I don't want you in the club.
Sure, get out.
Oh man, goodness. Okay, so looking at the public feuds as modern myth making, because obviously we're going to get existential up in here, is when these big cultural beefs go viral, they give us this like narrative of villain and hero that's so clear black and white when we know it's really not, right? So that simplicity, that emotional release, that getting to focus on something outside of our own shit and sense of participating in something, that sort of bonding and cohesion. So we're not simply just observing, we're picking sides. We may be stepping into some of our childhood family roles and dynamics, rehearsing our own sort of conflict fantasies. And then there's this double standard because again, it's entertaining, this public conflict, until we are the one, and then we feel deeply violated by it. You know, I even think back to the Monica Lewinsky stuff. I think she then became an expert in public shaming and bullying, even, you know, in her memoir, wrote a lot about that, because that poor woman, there was so much of all of that drama for years where people were just completely dehumanizing her and just, you know, what a slut, what a whore, like, all of this. And it's just gross, right? So it can be extremely violating, right? And even like thinking about the how like on either like Bachelor, what is the one where they come, Women Tell All, Men Tell All episode where all the cast comes back, yeah. or Love is Blind reunion, where if someone on the cast like either did something that people didn't like or whatever, or they just were maybe an unlikable quote unquote character on the show or got a poor edit or something, that they get like death threats.
Yeah.
And it's insane. And, you know, racist comments and all kinds of just insanity, this like public shaming. And we want to be heard without having to pay any personal price. And so, you know, then when it turns back on us, we can't handle the heat, right? So, because it's like, maybe we shouldn't be dishing that heat in the first place.
I'm really glad we're talking about the double standard of it. And that was so my like point for the episode where, you know, we hold what it's like in this media realm and the interpersonal, but now those two are so inherently enmeshed, it's really hard to separate them anymore because of the surveillance that we're all under. It is so easy to whip that phone out and capture someone's worst moments. And I don't know, I was watching the P. Diddy documentary recently, which that was just like a really tough watch, but a culturally necessary one. And it's weird, you know, like I sit and I think about like my generation and how we're kind of handling these things, you know, okay, someone comes on the internet and they're in defense mode and everyone's picking apart their, you know, apology video. It's just so like core to the internet of what I've been raised on. So, but then we have someone like P. Diddy, who's like a legit fucking criminal, you know, like committing disgusting criminal acts like over a very large period of time. Mm-hmm. And so many people were silenced. And these are these extreme cases of like legit crimes and abuse where there was no cancel culture for him back then to have the receipts to be brought into the light. I think of R. Kelly, you know, just... I'm like, Harvey Weinstein. Take note that it's a lot of these disgusting men, it's just kind of curious, you know, where yeah, we created Me Too because of Harvey, you know? Yeah. That's what kind of helped this cultural shift into no longer being silent. And now the Gen Zers and kind of like the Gen A, we took that, but now we've amplified it in such an interesting way where anyone can be your enemy, a public or personal enemy at any given point.
Yes.
And we're really lacking that nuance. And again, I'm not excusing mm-hmm. when right. receipts come out about someone that was acting abusively and inappropriately yep. and weird and just go to such these really extreme
right
black
away.
And white yeah. lengths right away, you know, uh-huh. innocent until proven guilty sits interestingly within me. It's always kind of the justice part of me has had a hard time mm-hmm. with that, but we have that kind of sentiment for a reason. And again, I'm not saying I agree with that at right. the moral and justice level. You know, sometimes it's pretty fucking clear when someone's a creep mm-hmm. and should not have public adoration and yeah. praise. And we apply that pressure to every single situation that's happening in the sphere of media. And then we try to duplicate that in our interpersonal spheres. And it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So where can we land the plane, right? Instead of do this better, we can just kind of explore a little bit of what you were saying, Val. Maybe what needs are being met when we watch drama? What are we rehearsing? What are those patterns that are coming out? What feels safer about someone else's conflict than trying to imagine having some kind of conversation or some kind of conflict of my own? And that question is really important for me as someone that is very open about like struggling with big, you know, negative feelings, conflict yeah. due to my own experiences with that. And it is like, okay, this someone else fighting gives me a little bit of rehearsal, okay, what to do, what not to do, but not every situation is so cut and dry. So, you know, what needs are being met when we're kind of delving into somebody else, into someone else's shit? What are we avoiding within ourselves? And I'm not saying it's always about this self-avoidance, but a lot of time it could be. So, but
or the moral superiority of it all.
Well, yes. But for real, our culture loves a conflict as long as it belongs to someone else. We have all been shaped by different cultural rules about how conflict is supposed to happen, quote. And now we're all operating with different playbooks whilst watching the same dramas unfold online or in real life. And the truth is, we don't just watch fights for fun. We watch them to learn and to regulate, to avoid our own unresolved tensions. And until we're honest about why we are gawking, we'll keep pretending we're above the drama while staying glued to it. So just a little truth tea there for everybody.
Love it.
And now our musical segment. Now that's what I call where Emerson and I each share a song with each other each week as representatives of our respective generations. We tell you a little bit about the song or artist, and then we press pause, we share the song with each other, and then we come back for our live reactions. And we're capturing it all on a Spotify playlist linked in the show notes for you.
Feud edition. So we were exploring any sort of songs that connected to either personal beef, maybe a song that got you through something like that, or a classic feud song in the zeitgeist. What have you got for us this week?
I mean, I could not put Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar. So if you have been living under a rock, and I say it with love, and you've never heard of Kendrick Lamar and you've never heard of Not Like Us, please go look him up immediately. Mm-hmm. But this song was released on May 4th, 2024, which gagged me. I was like, why did I think this was all 2025? No, this beef has just been simmering, honey. So
in
this
the crock pot.
Kind of in the crock pot, it's falling off the bone. Like, I'm adding onions. Like, I don't know. So this very public feud is between Kendrick Lamar, who is a rapper, and Drake, Aubrey, you know, Degrassi, the millennials, y'all know Drake before he was Drake. So this beef is just absolutely fucking legendary. I could talk about it forever, but I'm just trying to keep it tight. So Euphoria was the first kind of track that Kendrick Lamar released in response to Drake did kind of kick this beef off. Everyone's kind of going back and forth of who officially kicked it off. But I wanted to just give you this timeline because this is just nuts to me. So Kendrick releases Euphoria on April 30th of 2024. Then he follows up with Meet the Grahams, which Aubrey Graham, that's Drake's. He undresses and his entire family. Like, I went back and forth of if I should do Meet the Grahams for you because it is just insane, but we have to just go with Not Like Us. So that's April 30th. Meet the Grahams is May 3rd, and then Not Like Us was May 4th. He did not sleep. This song swept at the Grammys for Best Record of the Year, Best Video, Best Rap Performance. This was truly a cultural moment. It really kind of redefined East Coast, West Coast rap beef in like the hip hop kind of era. Just so interesting to see this play out in comparison to how everything played out with P. Diddy, Biggie, Tupac, Suge Knight, you know, in the 90s with Death Row Records. Just so, so interesting. Also, I'm just a fucking white girl and I know I don't know all the like real tea, but I'm so interested of how this culturally came about. So I'm sure you've heard this song, but I haven't seen the video all the way through. So I thought I'm sure Kendrick is releasing something very cool for us to check out.
Okay, I'm excited. And I feel like somebody, you or Becca, explained to me this beef at one point in time, and I have since forgotten it. So I don't even remember whose side I'm supposed to be on, but we're just going to check out this video.
That is so funny.
Okay. So please
there's
tell
so
me
much
what,
going on.
Please tell me what an OVHO is.
So, okay. From what I gather, I'm still unpacking like what all of this means. So there's something about what is it? I don't know if it has to do with
me googling OVO.
It's something with Drake, like his
label originated as a diss against Drake and his label OVO Sound.
OVO in Drake's world stands for October's Very Own, a nod to his birth month in October and the name for his entire brand, creative, collective, and record label OVO Sound.
Yeah,
and
so then if it's a line, diss.
Yes. So this comes up with the owl. So that owl, and at the end, he's locking the owl up. So much of certain lyrics in that, you know, certified lover boy, certified pedophile. So he's calling out Drake for being, he's alleging that he's a pedophile, and he's saying that, you know, you should keep your little sister from him and don't ever go to cell block one, because what do they do to sex offenders in jail? They beat them up. So I mean there is, this was lethal. Like, the more I sit with this, it is literally lethal the way that he just undressed all of this. And again, I'm still learning so much about what every single thing he says has so much meaning and intricacy. And so I'm just like,
yeah. Whoa. And that's why I feel like that's probably one of the reasons why I don't listen to a lot of hip hop. Cause I'm like, I am such an old white lady that literally we had the lyrics on that music video as the closed captioning, which is super helpful. Cause I'm like, okay, I can track it more, but I did not understand 95% of the words, right? Like I know what this word means, but when you put it in this sentence like this, I have no idea what you're saying.
I'm sure
those phrases all mean something, right? It's just not part of my lexicon.
No. And it's so hard to start like trying to, you know, like I didn't grow up listening to rap or like a lot of hip hop. So this is a new language totally in a way that you're trying to interpret. But I just such like an interesting opportunity to learn about Black culture.
Yeah.
And all of that. So my hat is off to Kendrick for sure for that one. And more to come. I'll have to send you like the lyric breakdown.
I mean, seriously, I'm sure somebody has gone line by line.
They have.
And yeah. Okay. Damn.
I know.
All right. My tea. So I know you know this song, but I couldn't not choose this song for this topic. And for listeners who may be on the younger side, this song, Not Ready to Make Nice by The Chicks, was written in response to backlash that the band got in 2003. They were doing a concert in London, right on the verge of the invasion of Iraq happening. And so at that concert, Natalie Maines said, we don't want this war, this violence, and we're ashamed that the president of the United States is from Texas, you know, referring to George W. Bush. And it was a big deal, right? This was like, because we're talking 20 plus years ago, cultural feuds or like pop culture feuds were not as the thing that they are now. They were not the normal thing they are now. So this was like a big deal. And then in 2000, I think it was six, they released this song after they kind of, you know, had time to sort of process the, because they got a lot of hate after that.
A lot.
And, you know, even before the word cancel existed, like a lot of people trying to cancel them. And so the song was, while they did have some bigger hits on the country charts, this is their only song to be certified 2x platinum. It won 3 Grammys for Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best Country Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal. And in 2009, Rolling Stone named it the 77th best song of the decade.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a phenomenal song, and I don't think that I maybe have ever seen the video. So I started watching a little bit of it yesterday just out of curiosity, and I'm like, okay, we're going to get to see it. Oh my God.
So fucking good. Like, she's just so good. I can't.
Her voice, I mean, all of them, but her voice just kills me.
Well, and I'm just, you know, you're right. Like, at the time that this all was going on, like, we didn't have cancel culture. We didn't have all the verbiage and all the, like, whatever that we know now. And so I was getting, like chills at the back of my neck, because I'm like, wow, like, these women were, like, taking a legit stand for something. And so even all that time that has progressed from then until now, and just, like, the state of the world that we're in, and not much has changed, you know, and in fact gotten like worse, that we could probably say, was just the amount of shit that's going on, where, you know, women in music at that time, just shut the fuck up and make music, or you should go kill yourself. You know, like, it's absurd to talk to anybody that way. And so good on them. That song is fucking awesome.
Right. I know. And like, to think that, you know, back in 2003, the only social media was really like MySpace. So people were like going out of their way to like mail letters and emails to them.
Hateful, mind you.
Like death threats and shit. It's crazy.
Oh, like, it's easy to comment on YouTube, like, I fucking hate you. Go tell yourself. Like, it's cowardly at how
to mail
easy
a letter.
It is. To mail a letter? You must be pissed. I'm scared.
Oh my God, I know.
And now for our last segment of the show, welcome to Fire Dumpster Phoenix. It is rough out there, y'all, and we need all the hope we can get. It's time to go dumpster diving for some positive news and rise from the leftover Happy Meal ashes together.
My little story this week, I thought was such a lovely example of, you know, there's so many ways that humans have fucked everything on this planet, right? And just the ways that we have intervened in ecosystems and with other species have been devastating to those ecosystems and species. But there are ways that we can mindfully come in and maybe amplify something or bring something in a way that ends up being mutually beneficial, and I think is so beautiful. And so an example of that is, in Michigan, there's these cherry crops, and Michigan State University in the state's upper peninsula, they had discovered that by encouraging this particular bird species, these little tiny kestrel falcons, to nest in the cherry orchards could reduce the presence of foodborne illnesses that can be passed by fruit to consumers. So essentially, what the kestrels are doing is they are keeping rodents and, more importantly, these small fruit-eating songbirds out of the orchards. And essentially, they are providing natural pest control. So by keeping those birds away, fewer avian pathogens will ultimately reach grocery store shelves. And this hypothesis in the study proved to be correct, because the kestrel guarded orchards showed an 81% decrease in crop damage, including missing fruit with bite marks, 66% decrease in bird droppings on the fruit trees. And farmers have actually noticed the difference of having these kestrels around, including this farmer who's been farming there for over 13 years, just noticing how little damage there is to the fruit crop compared to previous years. So cool. And it's not that expensive or invasive to bring these kestrels into that area. So pretty awesome.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
These little buds. Okay, I plugged this one from this week. So a group of automotive technology high school students from Louisa County High School in Virginia repair donated used vehicles and fix them up to give to single mothers who are in need. This program began in partnership with the nonprofit Giving Words, which is a local charity that helps support single parents by giving them a car, helping them with repairs. This nonprofit was started by founder Eddie Brown and his wife, who were inspired when they were single parents and struggled to, you know, get their kids around, get to and from work, not have to rely on folks for rides, not having that extra help of being in partnership when you're raising kids. So the students at Louisa County High School worked on this vehicle, have been doing this for quite a few years now. So they're, you know, getting to work on these cars, they're gaining skills. And, you know, it's not lost on me that these classes at a time may be pretty like male dominated with students. I don't doubt that it may still be, but it may not. And I think it's really important for high schools to stop putting so much pressure on kids to go to college. I feel really passionate about that. I loved my time at college. I don't regret going. Education is a really important pillar of my family. However, like going to college is not the only thing to do for someone and not the only way to kind of bake kids into having really cool life skills. Yeah. And even if it's just not life skills, giving them something that they feel really passionate about. I'm passionate about the trade. So quick sidebar there. But, you know, their teacher, Shane Robertson, was quoted in the article saying, you know, they're gaining skills. They get the opportunity to get the real life grit behind why they are doing a task, which I think is so important for our young people right now when we are in such a world of inconvenience, of convenience, should I say. So the students gave single mother Jessica Rader a fixed up 2007 Prius, and the article stated it was a helping hand arriving from the other side and a reminder that kindness can be delivered at any age. And Jessica told the Washington Post, "It's not just about the car, it's about community. Kids who never met me cared about me enough to put hard work into a vehicle to make sure myself and my kids were safe. I got to meet all of them and it was breathtaking." How lovely is that?
That's wonderful.
Gives like community. A little bit of hope. I know. And the kids are going to be all right. I keep saying that.
I hope
kids are going to be all right.
All right, listeners, that's all we got for you today.
Everyone stay safe and we'll see you at the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of But For Real, produced by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder and edited by Sean Conklin.
But For Real is a Gaia Center production. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit GaiaCenter.co or find us on Instagram at the Gaia Center and at ButForRealPod.
But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment.
Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy here about sharing our opinions on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode.
See you next time, bestie.